I wanted to start by kind of putting my paper in my own personal historical paradigm. I started out this class, and within the first maybe 10 minutes of my Sociology of Culture seminar last fall, Professor Greenfeld asked a question, you know, what is sociology? And the fact that virtually none of the sociology majors who filled the 20-person class could answer the question. So she asked a different question, asking, can anyone think of an example of someone who does sociology? And as my sociology classes had led me to believe, I answered Karl Marx. You know, I put forth this example, bright-eyed, hoping for praise, and was met immediately with the way that Mark puts it, I was grilled. And it was at that point that I realized that it was incredibly important to say what I mean and use each word carefully, because Professor Greenfeld will find any and every way to make sure that you're answering as correctly as possible. And so with that, it was that my inability to articulate my reasoning led to Professor Greenfeld's basically describing me as showing symptoms of someone who is schizophrenic. And in that way, I realized that I was on the path to a paper, and this is the product of that embarrassment. And so, in her newest work, she presents this logical framework where schizophrenia is necessarily the product of basically being raised in a situation of intense anomie or normlessness or very stressful inability to create an identity. And my paper suggests that the modern approach to psychiatry depends almost entirely on the use of psychopharmaceutical solutions to help decidedly non-biological afflictions. And I posit that a much more empirical, that is, experiential approach to treatment is necessary to cull the oncoming burden of psychological disease. What I mean is, you know, I spent a lot of my paper defining mentalism and to outline that, just basically that the mind is an emergent phenomena. And the way that I describe it is that, repeating how Professor Greenfeld outlines it, is that it's a three-tiered structure there's a three-tiered structure of emergent phenomena. Matter, she lovingly calls it the cake example. So there's matter, then life, and then the mind. And the boundary conditions for the tier beneath the next tier I'm going to read it because I'm going to... matter, as the foundation of life, is not life. Conversely, life, which is fundamentally comprised of matter, is patently more than the matter it is comprised of. The boundary condition of matter allows for the emergence of life, but clearly the functions of biological tissues cannot be reduced to the elements that construct the cells. The same logic can be applied to the mind. It emerges from the boundary conditions of biology, but is not explained by it. The mind is the experience of the biological brain and is the empirical access to symbolic reality. And so it's with this three-tiered structure of emergent phenomena in mind that it's very clear the logical problems with trying to treat schizophrenia and other cultural conditions with biological solutions, the impossibility is there. And I outline an example of, if you get a cut on your arm, you're not going to put equal parts of carbon and oxygen and other things, and it's not going to heal the wound. And by the same way, if you're addressing the biology and chemistry of the mind, you're not accessing the symbols that have basically created this disease. And so in that way, chemicals cannot access symbols. And clearly, you know, you can experience medicine in your brain. Like, if you're taking an extreme sedative or any of these medicines, you'll experience it, but it's not... The lack of identity, these pills cannot basically give you a new identity. And in that way, it's impossible to treat schizophrenia with medicine. So there is
You can read.
Okay.
Hell, I mean, that's all right.
That's all I did.
Okay, well, then, I will start from... Schizophrenia, according to Professor Greenfeld, do not have an identity. John Nash was raised in a household that, above all else, tried to appear significantly wealthier than it was. T.R. Larman writes, psychiatric illness, like all medical problems, but more so, is mired in the ugly realities of an American class structure. Nash was raised in a situation that was fundamentally based on a lack of identity, predicated on the United States perceptual caste system. John's parents basically told you, what you are is not what you should be. And as a result, John tried to construct an identity that he could cling to. Nash's upbringing created an intense enemy for himself, and as a result, he was essentially raised in the perfect situation to breed schizophrenia. He constantly changed his idea of who he was or what would constitute being a genius because identity, as a symbolic construct, created in a mind without means of filtering certain symbols situationally, cannot be achieved by means of any culpable accomplishment. There was always a higher star to reach for. That, surely, is a crisis of identity. And then, so... with the idea of the mind as an emergent phenomena in place, and the causal relationship of schizophrenia also in place, the idea of expecting that biological research into genetics and biological reasons for schizophrenia is almost comical in that way. If you believe the logical argument that the mind is an emergent phenomena, then you can't ascribe to the possibility that a disease that's caused by a lack of identity could possibly be treated chemically. And so I found data that, you know, they, in all these attempts to find genetic markers for this, that there's almost no correlation between what they find and what is true, because a lot of times they'll find, you know, inflamed pieces of the brain, but a lot of biological psychiatrists will say that that's almost, there's no correlation, and that those types of physical symptoms would not explain the experiences that a schizophrenic patients would. And so I posit that that psychiatrists needs to start doing the science of sociology to find out how the transmission of lifestyles can impact identity in conjunction with the careful application of some antipsychotic medicines to achieve both long-term and short-term progress in the recovery of their patients. Using the case of John Nash as an example, if his school or community had employed several of the psychiatrists using strategies such as the ones I've outlined, which would be I'm just going to read from before.
Yes. Why don't you read to us what are the strategies that you outline? And
I outline the fact that without an identity being formed at a young age, you're almost guaranteeing schizophrenia in the coming generation. And the World Health Organization has outlined the importance of trying to use strategies to fight this, these types of disorders. And so my suggestion is that using scholastic and community-based identity-building programs, you know, after-school programs where kids have to take part in sports teams or religious organizations or something where they can help derive their identities not individually but from a community so that it's not necessarily based on their home animic experience, that you can help not only treat potentially pre-psychotic patients but also prevent later psychotic breaks from as a result of having solid identities. And so I came to this conclusion based on Professor Greenfeld's structure of the importance of identity in preventing psychiatric disease such as this one. And in the case of John Nash, his schools had these types of programs where he had felt secure in himself who knows what would have happened, and you can't know. But to me, it seems that if the application of such identity-building programs to taxpayers, it may be hard, but at least it's not as hard to believe in as, you know, just saying that your kids need identity or they're going to be schizophrenic. But the application of more after-school programs seems like something that people would believe in anyway, and it has this incredible benefit of not having an entire country of incredibly acutely psychotic citizens. And so it's understanding the exponential nature of the growth of schizophrenia as a symbolic disease developing exponentially, like the amount of symbols that comprise our culture. It's clear that it's incredibly important to apply these types of things as soon as possible to help prevent hundreds of years of this burden of disease for all these incredibly just afflicted patients. And the medical field, in light of these changes, would need to reevaluate the benefits and costs of prescribing medicines to people who don't necessarily need them. There are schizophrenics whose brains have been physically ravaged by the very drugs that were supposed to alleviate their symptoms. Clearly, the limitation of psychotropic drugs in combination with a new, more personal focus on therapy would make fantastic strides towards a country whose psychological burden of disease would not be nearly as great. Schizophrenia's rate of growth is exponential, not coincidentally unlike the production of symbols and symbolic meanings. With the increasing amount of technology, occupations, and academic foci, the types of situations that breed identity-dissolving enemy increase exponentially. To save future generations of Americans, drastic measures must be taken in re-educating mental health professionals, as well as preventative measures to help institutionalize identity building.